Here we are at the last session of When Your Kids Push Your Buttons. We've covered a lot of material in a short amount of time, and material that needs time for sinking in and getting processed. Don't get down on yourself if you've not drastically changed the patterns in your parenting relationships yet. Remember, those patterns have been created over 30 or 40 years. 8 weeks is not likely to make them go away. You do, however, have the information and some ways of bringing that information into your own circumstances to make the changes you want over time. I hope you have had some aha moments that will encourage you to keep with the work. The beauty of this teleseminar is that you have all of the classes recorded to listen to whenever and as often as you like. As things change in your consciousness, you will hear information differently as you need it. The work is in keeping up with the determination to stay with the process. It's so easy to go back to the same old, and when you do, you'll probably tell yourself that you can't change. That's a perfect example of confirmation bias. If you continue to get your buttons pushed and react badly, that can serve to confirm your belief that nothing you ever do is good enough, or your child is simply never going to listen, so you'll give up and go back to believing that you just don't have what it takes, or that this may be fine for some children, but yours is different. Do not do that to yourself. Instead, ask yourself what you're getting out of continuing to believe that. Remember to be patient with yourself and have compassion for what a hard job it is to stick with the work and do what does not come naturally and probably does not even seem logical. You are now fish swimming upstream against the current of societal ways. You will have many messages telling you you're crazy. The best answer I can think of is to say, I know you want the best for me and my child, and what I need most from you is your support to help me try this new approach that feels right to me. So before we get into reading your mission statements, is there anyone who would like to work through one of the last exercises on page 35 or 36 of your workbook? Or did anyone write down a situation to use to go through the steps of getting to new responses on page 39? Yes, Nicole.
Hi, Bonnie. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I would like to go through that exercise.
Okay. Which one?
The one where they push the button, you know, one of the typical button pushing things they do, and then how to reframe my belief about it.
Right. So page 35?
Yes.
35. Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. So I've identified
yep.
a limiting belief that I have about myself, and it's that I'm not good enough and that other people's needs are more important than mine. I have this belief because as a child I was aware of my mother's hardships and always tried to make her okay and beat myself up when it didn't work, which her problems were beyond my abilities to fix. So it was an impossible task for me to try and tackle. How that drives my parenting today is I'm always trying to do everything right so everything will be okay, but now with my children. And so when they get upset, I get triggered, and it keeps me from allowing them to feel their feelings and have their own experiences in a loving environment. When I get what I get out of hanging on to this belief is that I feel worthy by working really hard at something, because that's what I always did as a kid. I figured if I keep working, sometime I'll get it right. And so it keeps my cycle of trying really hard for unachievable goals, so that I have to keep trying really hard because that's what makes me feel like I might be okay.
Right.
So this allows me to feel good enough because I'm working hard and might someday hypothetically achieve the goal of making everybody happy.
Mm-hmm. So you can't ever relax.
Right, exactly.
Letting go is, like, impossible, feels like.
Right,
yeah.
Right. If I let go of this belief, I'm afraid that I'm going to be open to being hurt. And I'm not good enough without being perfect and trying to overdo everything and protect myself. If I allow other people to make their own mistakes and not feel responsible for it, I feel afraid and scared that they're going to make mistakes and they're going to hurt me with them.
And their mistakes would mean what to you?
That that I'm failing.
Yeah.
I'm proving that I am not good enough.
Yeah. A lot of pressure, boy. Isn't it amazing how much pressure we feel? So do you see that as a spell? Can you kind of identify that as the spell that you're under?
Yeah. Over the past couple of days in writing my mission statement, I feel like I've had, and after talking to you in our private session, I feel like I've had a bit of a little bit of a veil unlifted, and I certainly don't feel, I feel like I do. I'm swimming upstream and there's a lot to do, but a couple of things have happened in the past couple of days that I'm really happy about it. Really, I feel like the whole class, I've been saying to myself, okay, I understand all this, I believe it, but I just still don't see it happening in my life, and I don't, but over the, like, I had a big incident with my daughter yesterday, and I went through it in a way that I haven't before fully. I followed it through completely, and it was a really difficult, challenging situation, and a very typical button-pushing situation for me. And the whole time I had the voices in the back of my head feeling uneasy and feeling like I just wanted to give up, but I just kept talking myself out of back into staying on course and just saying, just keep with it, and it was okay. It worked out, and like, I want to cry just talking about it. I know I'm a crier, but it was really something. And I journaled about it last night, and then I wrote my mission statement, and it all kind of just felt right.
Is that the example of the temper tantrum that you wrote about, that you wrote me about? Or was it a different situation?
No, it's something that just happened yesterday. Just quickly, she's in chess club. She's been doing it for 3 years. Every year she's gotten a medal. A medal is like the least of what you would get. She's been really trying to get a trophy. And she was the last name to be called for a medal. So she looked over at me and put her hand on her heart. She said, my heart's pounding. She really thought she was going to get it.
Wow.
And then they called her name for the medal. And she got up and she took the medal and she came over by me and she just started. The tears were welling up. And I said, let's get out of here. And I had my other daughter. And normally I would have said, come on, you got more points this year. Like, pointed out all the reasons to her why it's not so bad. And instead I didn't. I just said, come on, we can't scream in the school. We're still in the school. Let's get in the car and I'll get you home and you can let go whatever you need to. And we were supposed to go to a friend's house. And again, I would have been stressing about that. Like, well, they're expecting us and I have to get her through this quickly so that we can get there. And, I put all that aside and I just said, let her do this. And I took her home. I kept my other one busy outside. We have a rabbit. So I got her settled with the rabbit and took Lola inside and just said, you can say, she was still mad and acting out mad at me, which normally would push me.
Yeah.
And I just said, I hear you so, just tried to mirror her feelings. You're so disappointed. You heard your name last. You thought it was coming for the trophy and it came for the medal. It must have really sucked hearing that. And you really worked hard, just all that stuff.
Yeah.
And she kept answering me back snotty, but when she did that, I would pull back a little and not talk so much. And then she started throwing a chair. I said, well, can't do that. I said, if you want to go punch something, go in my room, punch my bed, punch my pillow. She said, well, that's pointless. And I said, well, do you want to just tell me everything you think about this right now? However mad you are, just say what you want to say. And she's like, well, so mad I want to curse. So I said, well, go ahead. She kind of looked at me with cockeyed, and I said, go ahead. Well, I said, this is a window right now. You can open it and put out whatever you want. I'm not going to judge you. And so she started cursing a little bit about it. And, you know, again, all the time, my little pet voice is, oh, this feels so bad. You know, I just wanted to jump ship. And
right.
I didn't. And it took a while. And then eventually we got to the friend's house, and she was like you playing with your daughter, like the weight was lifted. She was dancing with their little kids, and she just came free, and, like, oh, it was just amazing.
Oh,
and
Nicole,
I was so happy. I know. I was so happy.
Isn't it amazing when something lifts like that and you just see, oh, I'm so happy for you. That is wonderful.
It was really awesome. So
that's
thank
great.
You so much. Yes.
And it's like you know, as it was before, that medal, that trophy was about your parenting, right?
Yeah. I didn't prepare her to handle defeat. I didn't prepare her to be okay with not winning. You know,
right.
It would be all about me.
Right, exactly. And you wouldn't have gotten a trophy in parenting.
Right.
As it is, it wasn't about you. You could let it be all about her.
Yep.
Oh, that's wonderful, Nicole. I'm so glad.
It was really great.
So as long as you're on the line now, do you want to go ahead and read your mission statement?
Sure. Yep. So my mission statement is, and I sort of wrote this in the form of affirmations just because I feel like that's what I need personally.
Yeah, and I would ask you to, if you've got it with you, what you sent me in the email, starting with the main message I learned from my children's button pushing behaviors.
Okay.
You have that?
Yeah. Yep, I do. The main message I learned from my children's button pushing behaviors is that I have a lot of old messages that haunt me when confronted with their problems, such as, I can never do anything right. I'm not good enough no matter how hard I try. I've made too many mistakes to try and change now, and I've been taking their own personal their struggles as proof of my own personal failure. This served me because then I can keep my old pattern that I use for self-defense to try really hard at everything to prove I'm good enough, which I don't allow to happen because I keep blaming myself for other people's stuff and my cycle continues. The message they've been getting from me is that they have to be happy and perfect to make me happy. And if they are good, in quotes, mommy is happy. And if they're anything else, mommy is upset. And we're responsible for her happiness. And then in parentheses, I wrote that same message I got. What I want them to hear is that I love you with no strings attached. I'm strong and I want to listen to your feelings. I dream that someday they will realize their unique gifts and treasure them. I dream that they will accept and love themselves. So then my mission statement is that I believe in myself. I am my own strong, unique person, special and creative. I forget the mistakes of the past because I am exactly the mother that Lola and Marina need. I have a wonderful partner, and I will let him know that. I deserve and accept their love. I ask for help when I need it and listen beneath the surface to the needs of my family. I model strong self-worth by setting boundaries between myself and my family. And when they're having a problem, not being a problem, I detach and look for a way to connect. I offer empathy by mirroring their feelings, staying present, and allowing them space to experience their feelings. When I make mistakes, I go back with clarity and take ownership. I take a moment each day to see the beauty in all of us because it warms my heart and makes me smile.
Wow, that's just great.
Thank you.
And
I was scared to write this, and after this incident happened with her yesterday, I felt great about writing it. And it meant something to me. Like, I feel like I'm going to read it every day.
Yes. And that's what I want to suggest to all of you. You keep these mission statements in your bedside table drawer or somewhere where you know where it is, and especially when you're having a hard day, pull it out and read it. And I think they're, you know, as I say, it doesn't matter what you write. It doesn't matter how you do it. All it needs to do is work for you and not be so airy-fairy that it, you know, it doesn't mean anything to you. So that's great, Nicole.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for doing the hard work. Another mission statement. I will, let me read one that I've got from Sabina, who cannot be on the call today. And just, you know, raise your hands and leave them raised. Sheila, I see yours is up. I will get to you, you know, but do raise your hands so I know how many we have going here. So Sabina says, due to my new understanding, I am aware that my child is his own person with his own mind, agenda, expectations, and experiences. Knowing this, he deserves empathy, compassion, consideration, and respect. He has a right to his feelings and thoughts. I am here to help and motivate my child not to take his behavior personally. I am doing this by being aware that I am 100% responsible for everything I say and do. Realizing that anger always covers up fear, and it's fear that triggers my reaction. It's very important not to react when my buttons get pushed. I breathe and walk away. By reframing my assumptions, which is looking at a behavior objectively, more realistically and from a different perspective, my child's perspective. My child is not a problem. My child is having a problem. By being present and connecting with my child while still being firm and consistent in my parenting. By setting expectations that my child is capable of meeting, letting up on anything I'm saying or doing to make him feel like he has to get it right or to be perfect. By thanking and acknowledging him for who he is. And by apologizing to him for my mistakes and owning those mistakes. By having clear boundaries where I own my problems and responsibilities. They are mine, and my child's problems are his. By being a sounding board and disengaging from his problems, I am better able to help him problem solve. By not taking responsibility for my child's behavior or problems or for fixing them. By realizing that I do have beliefs from my childhood that affect my parenting. By raising my consciousness of these beliefs, I am now aware that my reactions, yelling and screaming, have more to do with my past than with the present and my child. They are my feelings and my responsibility, and I will not project them onto my child and blame him for my feelings. And by not passing those beliefs onto my child, beliefs such as not being good enough, having a lack of confidence, not trusting myself or others. All right. These are always, every single time I teach this course, I find these mission statements so amazingly inspiring, and I hope you all do too. Okay, Sheila.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I just have to say, Nicole, I'm so moved by your success, and that was great. That was just so fantastic, really. I'm so moved. Okay, well, mine is, I just kept, I did it, so that's a win for starters. And it's not very long, but it's...
Doesn't have to be. Some of them are amazingly short.
Okay.
So, again, anything.
Okay, so here's mine. I have the resources and ability to create harmony in myself and my family. I consistently manage my emotions and do not blame my children when my buttons get pushed. My buttons almost never get pushed. I'm available for my children because I take such good care of myself. I am an outstanding role model. Because I am so organized, rested, full of energy, loving, and fun. My children love and respect me. They feel safe and loved. And that's it.
All right. And how did that feel to you, writing it?
It felt really good.
Good.
I think it just encapsulized, you know, the main points for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my challenges. And, you know, as I listen to everybody else's, I might steal some things or, you know, add some things to mine.
Yeah.
But I think this, you know, this is, boy, if I can, when I create my mission statement, if I can do that 50% of the time, I'll be pretty happy.
Yeah, exactly. I would like you to add to it something that allows you to be completely accepting of yourself when you're not all those things you set yourself out to be there. You
mm-hmm.
had a list of some wonderful attributes, absolutely, but I just want to make sure you're not setting your expectations for yourself so high that you feel like a failure if you're not there. So be sure and put in something about, I don't know, you know, there will be good days and bad days or whatever. You know
okay.
what I mean? You know
right.
what I mean? Right. And your kids too. And that's great. That's great, Sheila.
I did an old assumption, and I don't have to read the whole thing.
Oh,
but
good.
One thing that that came up when I was going through the behavior and the buttons and my assumption and my emotion and my childhood belief of being good to get love, when my son's not behaving, I make the button that gets pushed is that I make it mean that he doesn't love me.
Aha, uh-huh, yes.
And I was like, whoa, that's interesting.
Mm.
You know, I knew, you know, that my buttons were getting pushed and then for a lot of other reasons, but that when that kind of just came out and I thought, oh,
that's a big aha.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a lot to put
yeah.
on a little.
And
so,
were you able to reframe that? When he, what is it that he's doing that makes you think he doesn't love him? Just when he pushes your button.
Yeah, when he's not behaving the way I want him to.
Right. So can you reframe that?
I said my reformed assumption is he's having a problem and he needs something.
Right. That's great.
So
exactly. That's a huge, huge perceptual shift.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yes. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right. And is this Annabelle?
Yep. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I'm okay. Yeah, I'm good. I really, really struggled with this exercise.
Okay.
It's been driving me nuts.
You're not the only one.
For the last week, and it's just what I've found hard is just to get it all clear and concise. It just seems so much information. And you know, one of my things is I've got to get it right and I've got to get it perfect. So, you know, it brought up a lot for me. But I just tried to make it, I just tried to whittle it down to what touched me. And,
right.
you know, I try not to compare with others. That's another thing I can do is this comparison thing. So anyway, here we go. Okay. I am providing a safe, secure, loving container for Callum to thrive in. To achieve this, I need to keep reminding myself to stay grounded and present and heart-centered, especially when I'm triggered. In that place, I can notice the arising of judgments, fear, and negative beliefs, feel them, reframe them, and let them go. When I get triggered, I'm committed to going through the process I've learned during this course. Stop, breathe, look at assumptions, expectations, beliefs, agendas, and reframe my expectations for success for Callum. I need to remember I have my boundary and Callum has his. I'm not responsible for his emotions, behavior, and problems, and he's not responsible for mine. I'm aiming to have I have compassion for myself and therefore compassion for Callum. What I'd like Callum to hear across the gap is my love, my empathy, tenderness, and strength. And that's it.
That's beautiful. That feels very personal. And, you know, I don't know what you took to get there. You said it was really hard to get there.
Yeah.
It feels very heart-centered to me.
Thank you. Oh, that's what I wanted it to be. Thank you.
Absolutely lovely.
Yeah. Thank you. Right. I had to keep going for walks because I'd sit down and try and write it and it just wouldn't come. And then I'd end up just going for walks and take a pad with me, you know, and jot things down.
Oh, good idea.
That's the only way I could do it. In the end.
Well, you know, what that shows is how busy our minds are and how the patterns of our thoughts just interfere with opening up and letting new ways of thinking come in.
That's right. Today I went for this beautiful walk down to the river and I just took a notebook and then I wrote it in not very long, you know. After struggling for bloody days, I tell you. Yeah.
I think that's a wonderful example to share that. We struggle, and we're all full of these thoughts. I'm not getting it. I must not be doing it right. I'm not where everybody else is. Whatever you're thinking.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, when you can just let it go. It all comes. It's just all that. And I think
it was great.
Trusting,
thank you.
Trusting that it's there, you know, for all of us to trust that if we can't tap into it all the time, that doesn't mean it's not there.
Mm.
It's just having to get to that place where we can breathe and let things go. And that's the beauty of being able to let go. You somehow let go of something. So that it all kind of poured in.
Mm. Yeah, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Annabelle. So I am... Is Rebecca on the call? She wasn't sure whether she was going to be able to make it or not. So she might be on late. But she sent me hers just in case. So I'm going to... Teresa?
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. This one was also really hard for me, and I did it differently than anyone else, although it was similar.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, I know. I heard the words, but believe it.
I know.
And I wanted to see, I was actually sort of inspired by one of the ones in the book. And I chose that style because it was really concise, because I wanted to put it up on my fridge so that I could, so I could see it. And so I did not put the ones in that were basically the same as that person, and right now I only have five that are that I've written. So I'll just read those ones.
Okay.
Although there's 20 on the list. I just haven't been able to finish it. So I have it written out as new and old, but to make sense of it right now, even though new is on the top, for me, I'll read it as old first so that you know what the original thought was or belief.
Right.
So my old belief is that I'm only worthy when I get it right and mistakes equate failure. And my new belief is my parenting counts even though it's not 100% perfect. And just really simple. My old is that I don't count, and my new one is taking care of myself is an is a expression of love. I put my needs as top priority. I can do this even while attending to my children. When I care about attending to my own emotions and needs, I give from a place of abundance. My old is that I'm not okay, you're not okay and safe when you cry. I fail to protect, and I'm responsible for all of their pain. My new is I'm comfortable with my children expressing their big emotions. I know their emotions belong to them and are not for me to own or fix. I model my own emotional regulation so that their maturing brains learn to self-regulate over time. Old, others' negative judgment of me as a parent always overrides my own self-confidence. I accept the perception as truth. New is, I am still a good parent, even if I am being judged harshly. When I make mistakes, I own them and make necessary changes. When I excel, I recognize my abilities and strengths. Those are the ones that I'm so emotional because I was really heavily triggered by an event that happened this week, and it's really touched a nerve for me of just this lack of self-confidence and trust in myself. Mm-hmm. So while I know these aren't focused on my children, they're mostly about me.
Well, that's what the course is about, Teresa.
Yeah. those are the biggest ones. I'd like to add that there is one here that I thought was really amazing, but it's not mine. It was this other person's, and I'll just read it. It was
in the book?
In the book, yeah. Okay. It says, old, a good mother should feel secure in all her decisions surrounding boundaries and discipline issues with her children. And the new one is, I accept that I do not have all the answers, but continue to learn and listen to my child while respecting my boundaries and the boundaries of others. And then there's, I have 20 more, but I haven't written them out.
I think that's great that you're taking your time doing it, especially when you're getting, triggered by things and you want to, this is something you want to take time with. I think that's absolutely fine, and I hope everyone sees this as a work in progress, you know, not the final bit. And
yeah.
you can't take it all at the same time anyway. You know, you want to just let things start to play out as they do in your life and see, and your consciousness, your new consciousness is going to allow you to have a different perspective when it happens. And it doesn't mean it's all going to be solved, but there were some, you know, very powerful beliefs in there. And the way you've reframed them. This is, it's amazing to me how many, you know, it's not amazing to me. I don't know why I said that, because it's pretty common. But I think almost every one of you has dealt with the I'm not good enough and I can't, I'll never be good enough if I don't get it right. It's just amazing, isn't it, how pervasive that is. And I think really, really important to us as parents to see how that has affected us and how important it is not to do the same thing to our children, to put that kind of pressure on them, to get it, to have to get it right. You know?
Yep.
So that's wonderful, Teresa. I thank you for that.
Thanks, Bunny.
Okay. All right, I'm going to read Rebecca's, who was not able to be on the call. And hers did the same thing. My new parent mission for now bubbled to the surface for me when I realized that one of the things that makes me so uncomfortable and reactive is my daughter's tears and crying and screaming. I typically send her to her room and tell her she can come out when she's done crying, and I've even covered her mouth up with my hand. I did this because I didn't want her to wake up her sister, but I realized how awful this is. I think my discomfort with her emotions stems from my mother and her deep unhappiness. I think watching her cry or get angry or stomp away must have made me feel unsafe. So her new mission, I allow my daughter to express her emotions, and I'm able to stay centered and calm and to be her witness without trying to change the circumstances or trying to get her to stop. I let my daughter know it's okay to be mad or sad or angry and that she can cry. Then she goes on and says, the other thing that I found interesting was listening to the story from Teresa, whose mother has never been able to give her a compliment or praise her for her achievements. I come from the other extreme. My mother did tell me she was proud of me, and she instilled in me the belief that all she wanted from me was to be happy. And I believe it was Rebecca who said her mother did a homework assignment for her and always was a fixer. It didn't matter what I did as long as I was happy. When I struggled in math and got poor grades, my mom told me it didn't matter. I, of course, didn't know what would have happened if she had expected me to get good grades, but I think I gave up a lot. That's how I feel now, like, why would I have tried if she didn't expect me to do well? So my response to that is, Rebecca felt let down by a mother who only wanted her to be happy. And it sounds like you thought you didn't matter or count, Rebecca, and maybe that you weren't smart enough to do well. So if she didn't think you'd do well, why bother? It's not necessarily what she meant, but what you took from it. So there's that balance we need to find, isn't there, from pushing and pushing and saying you've got to get good grades, you've got to do it right, you've got to get everything right, you can't make mistakes, to the other extreme of saying nothing you do matters. And whether it was the message of I'll love you no matter what, but when nothing matters, when there aren't any expectations, then often, as Rebecca did, we come out of the situation thinking that we didn't count. Nobody cared. It wasn't. And so maybe that is a source of feeling pitied or dismissed in a way. You know, that place of where there's not, there aren't any expectations, and so what does that mean? Does that mean I'm not good enough no matter what? It's so weird what we do. What I would like to do with you right now is an exercise that is not in your workbook. I'd like you all to, if you're not already, to sit very comfortably and have something in front of you to just jot down a couple of things on. But get yourself really comfortable, whether you want to get in a, if you're used to meditating, put yourself in that physical place, or just sitting comfortably in your chair, feeling very, very relaxed, but able to write by just with no effort, with no having to get things. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. If you're not comfortable closing your eyes, just have a very soft gaze, right, kind of down low in front of you. And I want you to visualize a happy time with your button pusher. If you have more than one, pick one of them. And put yourself in a very relaxed, happy place, in a really lovely environment. Whether you make it up or it's someplace that's familiar to you, it doesn't matter. So you're having just a wonderfully connected moment with your button pusher. And I want you to envision your child looking at you lovingly, admiring you, just looking up to you. Your child is in adoration of you, and you are in awe of your child, and you're feeling very, very loving. Look carefully into your child's eyes and ask your child, I'm going to ask you three different questions to ask your child. After each one, I want you to jot down your answer. I'll give you just a moment or so since we're on a call. So look lovingly into your child's eyes and ask your child, what are you trying to tell me when you push my buttons? And write it down when it comes. What are you trying to tell me when you push my buttons? What are you trying to tell me when you push my buttons? And then next, I want you to ask your child, what are you trying to tell me about what you need from me? What do you need from me when you push my buttons? What are you trying to tell me that you need from me when you push my buttons? And the last question, what are you trying to teach me about myself? What are you trying to teach me about myself? When you push that button, what do I need to learn about myself? If you didn't get a chance to finish those, let me just go over the questions one more time so you can write it down if you didn't get to finish. What are you trying to tell me when you push my buttons? Is the first. What are you trying to tell me about what you need from me? And what are you trying to teach me about myself? Does anyone want to share what came up for you during that exercise? Nicole?
Yeah, hi. So the first one, what are you trying to tell me when you push my buttons? And I was thinking of my older daughter. I think she's trying to tell me, I'm afraid you don't love me just as I am.
Mm.
And you don't understand me.
Mm.
And you're not listening to me. The second question, what do you need from me when you push my buttons? I think she needs my acceptance and love.
Mm.
And openness. And the third one, what are you trying to teach me about myself? I think the irony of it is she's trying to teach me that I'm okay just the way that I am, and that I am loved if I just let myself be open and let her be who she is.
That's exactly right. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Good. And Annabelle.
Yeah, the first one was he's trying to tell me that he's an individual and he has his own feelings and agendas.
Mm.
And then the second one, what was he trying to tell me? What he needs from me, blah, blah, blah. He needs understanding and empathy.
Mm.
And what's he trying to teach me? That I'm strong and I'm able to handle it in a loving way.
These two are amazing, because in my mind, what this whole course is about is understanding that our children are our teachers, and that with this behavior that is so annoying, that is so infuriating, that leads you to such rage and fear and worry and everything, is indeed trying to tell us to just let go of this crap that you're bringing with you. It's like they're pounding on that attic door saying, you don't need to believe this anymore. Stop this. You're fabulous. You're wonderful just the way you are. And both of you got to that. That was really lovely. All right. I want to say a little bit more about this, your child is your teacher piece. It's so important, I think. When our button gets pushed, an old wound is triggered that causes us pain. And in order to stop the pain, we try to stop what we think is the source of that pain, which is what your child is doing or saying or looking like or whatever. And we use whatever power, which are our old automatics, we can to stop our child. When we can diffuse the buttons, we're healing ourselves as well as our relationship with our child. And it takes our child to show us how to do that. We have learned how through our child. Your child provoked your reactions by pushing your buttons. If this had not happened, your button would have remained back there in that attic, all covered up, however, driving your decisions, driving your choices, driving your parenting, because you would not have been conscious of them. Your child, therefore, has been the catalyst for your healing. And through that, your relationship with your child can change. So here's just an example to go through, and then maybe if anyone else has an example you'd like to go through. For instance, I withheld approval from my child who, quote-unquote, made me feel embarrassed when she chided me in front of her girlfriend, saying, "You really don't know anything, do you, Mom?" I might ignore her with an attitude. I might send her to her room or yell at her and embarrass her back or be sarcastic to her or slap her. I've used my power to try to make her stop doing what she did, to thwart the power she had over me when I took her words personally. These are reactions to a button, possibly the appreciation button or the resentment button, but my reaction will only provoke further negative remarks from my daughter, even if it stops her in the moment. The relationship has not changed unless it has gotten worse. If I can defuse my button, I will not take her remark personally. It may still cause me to be annoyed, but I will likely hold off reacting and wait to address it when her friend is not there. You see, it's very important to realize, to accept the fact that diffusing a button does not mean you're not going to have any feelings about what's going on with your child. You can still be annoyed. You might still be angry. You might still be frustrated. But you're going to own it, and you're not going to take it personally when that button is diffused, right? When you take it personally, that's when you give away your power to your child. So, I might still be annoyed, but I'll likely hold off reacting and not kind of give her a taste of her own medicine, so to speak. So, if the remark is rude enough, I might take her into another room right away. But I'm still not reacting, right? I'm still not acting on my automatic of how rude and disrespectful she's been. Then in the other room, I might say, "I didn't appreciate that comment you made. It seemed to me as though you wanted to embarrass me in front of your friend to gain some kind of power in her eyes. You're just conjecturing here. I'm wondering if you're afraid your friendship is on the edge with her. I hope that you don't let anyone talk about you in your presence like that. Whatever the reason, I expect that you will have more regard for me in the future. May I have your assurance of that, please?" You see, this isn't about letting your kids, quote-unquote, get away with it. It's just about being responsible with it. So depending on the situation, you know, if you've got a really easy, relaxed, connected relationship with your child, and she comes up with something like that, you know that that's not normal. You might even turn it into a joke by saying something like, "It must be so frustrating to have such an ignorant mother. Maybe you could see about turning me in for a different model." But boy, you sure can't take it personally if you're going to come up with something like that, right? When a parent can respond this way, she's become a stronger person than the one she was when she reacted in rage and embarrassment. These children, these button pushers, are the most important teachers we will ever have. So when you get to a moment when your button is being pushed, this is a choice point. The choice point is, I can punish my child, yell at my child, threaten my child for pushing that button, or I can stop and I can look at what that button is that's getting pushed and why, and take responsibility for myself. Sheila, yes. Sheila,
oh.
You there?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, I have your hand raised here.
I don't know why I didn't raise.
Okay. Anybody have anything you want to say at this point? All right, so I want to talk a little bit about trust. The issue of trust is really, really big. And I'm not talking, at least at this point, I'm talking about, well, trust going both ways. It's your trust in your child. The end product is that you want your child to trust you implicitly. And as we've said, I think, throughout a lot of the course, when you punish your child, when you threaten your child, when you give your children messages that they are troublemakers, that they are a pain in the neck, they find ways of being sneaky. They find ways of getting away with it. They find ways of maybe behaving in a way that they should when they're with you, but finding ways of doing what they want behind your back. And I'm sure many of you experienced that when you were young, right? We do that. That's part of it. And, you know, kids are going to do that. Kids aren't going to share all the stuff that's going on with them. But when it's important, when something is really important to them, you want them to be able to come to you and share with you their problems. I remember one time when my son was in high school and an incident happened for him. He was actually at boarding school and he was telling me about it. And I said, now, is this something that you can talk to your advisor about? And he said to me, but you're my number one advisor, Mom. Just melted my heart. You know, it's just so wonderful when your children feel comfortable enough to tell you whatever's bothering them. And, you know that they're not going to tell you everything. They will have their private lives, their agendas that they either don't want to share with you or that they don't feel it's what they want you to know about. But when it's important, they do. So in order to get there, our children need our trust in them. And that's, you know, trust and respect are both the same thing. You can't teach it to your child. You can't teach your child to be respectful. You can't teach your child to trust. You do it by modeling for them. And we've talked a lot about respect in terms of how we are respectful of them, when we listen to them, when we hear their emotions, when we take their side of the story into consideration, when we acknowledge their agendas. All of that is modeling respect. So in the same way, we want to do that with trust. So I have this image that I use of, it's kind of a little weird, but it's an IV. If any of you have ever had an IV put into your arm, you know that there is a needle that goes into your veins so that you can be fed into your veins whatever your body needs. So I think of this as the IV of trust. So as a parent, you have an IV into your child's veins at all times and flowing through that IV, that tube, into them is your trust in them. So that trust is constantly flowing. And it's so important because so much of the time we use their behavior to decide whether we're going to trust them or not. So we'll very often, if our child does something untrustworthy, we might say, I can't trust you now. You have to show me that I can trust you. You have to prove that to me. But in this way, what I'm talking about is, you know, that continual pumping of your trust into your child's veins so that they know they're trusted to behave appropriately and honorably. When they know that, they don't want to betray that trust. But when they feel distrusted and they have to prove themselves over and over again to regain a parent's trust, they may not think it's worth it in the long run. And if they get that message that so many of you did about not ever being good enough no matter what you tried, you know, it's like, what's the point? No one's going to trust me anyway. No one's going to believe in me anyway, so I might as well forget it. So some statements, well, let me first say that I'm not talking about agreeing with everything your child does. I am not talking about letting behavior go that is untrustworthy behavior. What I am saying is that your trust in them is so important, especially when their behavior is untrustworthy. So it means that you trust the core of the person your child is. You trust their developmental process and all the mistakes that process entails. You trust that in order to learn, we all make mistakes, some of them big ones, some of them little, and that those mistakes, especially if they get to experience the natural consequences of them instead of the arbitrary punishments we dole out, those natural consequences are the most important teachers. So even when your child is making huge mistakes, your trust is not saying their behavior is okay. Your trust is saying, I trust that you are going to learn from this. I trust who you are. I trust that you are going to be able to hurdle whatever comes along in your life and that you are going to learn and you're going to do the honorable thing. So here are some statements that instill trust. I know I can trust you to make a good decision about this. So instead of you jumping in and fixing it and rescuing your child, if your child's having a hard time or your child's not getting along with a sibling or something, you might say, I know I can trust you to make a good decision about this. I know you know that it's not okay to hit. I don't have to keep telling you that. I bet you can come up with a solution that will work. I trust that you will always do what feels right to you and will not let others influence you against your wishes. That's a big one. Now, I'm going to say that one again. I trust that you will do what feels right to you and will not let others influence you against your wishes. That is something that gets undermined again and again and again and again. When we make our children do what we tell them with no back talk, with no, don't you talk back to me, you do what I say because I tell you. You do what your teacher says, I don't want to hear any complaining or grumping about that. That's telling our children, don't trust yourself, you must always listen to others, you must always do what others tell you to do. And the last one on my list here, and I'm sure you can come up with tons of your own, I trust that you have your own best interests in mind. And again, these things don't have to be said as much as felt. So that doesn't mean that your child does have their own best interests in mind, especially when they're really little, especially when they don't know to not go running in the road when a car is coming, or they don't know that grabbing a toy away from another child is going to hurt their feelings or make them cry. We are their guides. We have to be in there until they do, until their developmental process does allow them to know what's best for them. So I want to tell you a little about what I call the no-blame solution. First, let's hear from Annabelle.
I really hear what you're saying about trust. And the problem I have with Callum is that, and I know this is probably from my past unskillful parenting and everything and blah, blah, but he just lies a hell of a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He lies about everything.
And just so everyone remembers, Callum is almost 13, right?
Yeah, and he's been lying for a while now, you know, a few years. And, it's some things like, from small things like, well, have you cleaned your teeth yet, love? Yes, and I know he hasn't, you know. And or to bigger things, you know, I can't think of examples right now, but he is just a terrible liar. And it's very hard for me to trust him. And I'm afraid I've made the mistake from listening to you now of saying, sweetheart, it's really hard for me to trust you when you don't tell me the truth.
Mm-hmm. And that's a logical response. We all do that.
Yeah, and I've probably made him more likely to lie, but I don't know. It's
so
hard to me.
As we're talking, if you can think of some more serious ones, throw it in. But when would you say he started?
I can't remember, Bonnie. I mean, it's a few years ago now.
Okay, but not when he was little.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, no. I would say it's 7, 8.
Okay, yeah.
I can't remember.
The reason children lie, and I put the word lie in quotes, because I always tell parents to take that word out of your vocabulary altogether.
Mm.
And instead, think of it as your child not telling you the truth for some reason.
Yeah.
Lie puts a whole... it's that assumption, right? When you assume he's lying, your feelings are going to be very different than if you think he's not telling me the truth for some reason.
Yeah.
Lying to me is what's being done to you.
Mm.
And he's not telling me the truth is more about him.
Yeah.
And it takes you to wondering what's going on with him.
Mm.
So children lie in order to avoid getting in trouble, right?
Yep.
And themselves getting in trouble, which is number one biggest reason right there.
Yep.
To take threats and punishments out of their lives, then they don't have to lie to avoid getting in trouble if that's not part of the package, if they don't get in trouble. So another big reason is that they don't want to disappoint us. They don't want us to feel disappointed in them.
Mm-hmm.
So if he has done something that he knows that would disappoint, or not done something that he knows would disappoint you, he's going to tell you differently, right?
Yeah.
And then, by the time it gets to Callum's age, it's kind of become habit.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any idea whether this goes to other people? Has he lied to other people? No.
Well, yes, I can think of an example now. Shall I tell you an example?
Yes.
A bigger one. Which involves stealing as well. And that involves stealing as well. So he went through, I hope he's not doing it anymore, I don't know, but he went through a phase a year or so ago where he would take stuff, especially from his stepmother. He stole, for instance, I mean, he took 9 of her rings one day, right? And then she rang me up and said, look, have you found these rings? They're missing, blah, blah, blah. And I asked him, you know, have you taken the rings? So of course he lied about it.
Right.
And then I found them, you know. So that's a bigger example. Yeah, that would be the not wanting to get in trouble, not wanting to disappoint. You know, he knows. And he's done that a few times where he's taken stuff from her and from other children, actually, and then lied about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and really, really got upset when I've said, you know, when I've found out that he has actually taken this toy or this ring or this whatever.
So,
you know, and
what's his relationship like with his stepmother?
Well, not close.
Okay.
I mean, she looks after him and she feeds him and all of that. She's quite strict, but
mm-hmm.
she's not doing this kind of parenting, you know.
Right.
She's a traditional type parent. She's got grown-up boys. She's, you know, in her 50s, 60 maybe. She's
mm-hmm.
been there, done that. She said she's washed her hands of him now. After the last stealing episode, she said, I've washed my hands of him. I will look after him. I will be polite to him. But I've washed my hands of him, you know.
And what does that mean to the child? Whether he knows she said that or not, that affects how we are with a child, right? That she has completely, you know, we talk about the importance of disengagement. This is not disengagement. This is complete separation, right?
Mm.
She has pulled down the door.
But that's because she's done that when she's been so pissed off with him stealing from her.
Right,
you know.
Right. But something led up to that.
Yeah.
Now, something led up to him taking away from her what he knew was important to her. Or taking away something maybe that he didn't think she deserved having.
Mm.
I think it's unconscious.
Yes, it could be that he's jealous of the relationship with his father or whatever.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
With a step-parent, it's so hard to know.
Mm.
So if maybe, you know, if he took her rings, it would affect their relationship, he'd come back to you, you two of you would get back together again, who knows, you know?
Yeah.
So many complicated things.
Mm.
Another thing, you know, how to reframe lying into avoiding, you know, not telling you the truth, reframing it to not telling you the truth. You want to reframe stealing into taking something that he thinks he wants or needs. And the rings, I think, are symbolic of what he wants or needs. So, and taking a toy away from another child is about taking something that they want, that they don't think they're ever going to get. You know, kids steal food if they're not allowed to have a certain kind of food. They'll take it, you know, when you think, or kids steal computer time, right? If they're being yelled at and nagged all the time to get off, and you've got to get off when the timer goes off and blah, 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 then they're going to steal time.
Mm.
It's
mm.
all the same kind of thing.
Mm.
So, you know, I think, of course, you're worried. Of course, you've got concern about that. And I think the way to address it, has the ring situation ever been resolved?
Yeah, he gave them back.
Okay.
And I'm afraid, against my better judgment, we had consequences
I wouldn't do that now.
Uh-huh.
You know, he wasn't allowed on the computer for a week, and
uh-huh.
his father insisted on getting the community policeman around to come and talk to him to
uh-huh.
scare him.
Uh-huh.
You know, I wouldn't do that now. It was against my better judgment, but his father was so
yeah.
upset about it. And, oh, he's going to, you know, I'm catastrophizing about it. You know, he's going
right.
to end up in prison. He's going to end up with a police
right.
record.
That's
all that
what
stuff.
We do. Yeah, of course.
So against my better judgment, I went along with it, you know.
Yeah, so
but there you go.
There's a lot in his father's house that he's got to protect himself from.
Mm. Yeah.
And some of that fallout is going to come to you.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I don't think he steals from me nearly as much, you know.
So when something comes up, when he says something that you suspect is not the truth.
Yeah.
Give him an out. Say to him something like, I'm suspecting that you're not telling me the whole truth here, or that you're afraid that I'm going to get upset with you, or you're, you know, just not wanting me to nag you or get involved, whatever you come up with. This is what I'm
mm-hmm.
guessing is going on here. So I'm going to give you one more, you know, I'm going to just let it go for the moment, and then I'll ask you again.
Yep.
And so you give him another chance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes something like that will seem perfectly apropos, and sometimes not. But
yeah.
So
yeah.
try to avoid the word lie. Try to avoid the word steal. There's
mm-hmm.
something missing. There's some change missing from my pocketbook. I wonder if you know anything about that. And of course, he would say no.
Mm.
And then you can say you could. You know, ask him to just think about it. Maybe he forgot, and give him another opportunity. And I'm not going to ask again. We'll see if it magically appears. Now, when things get, you know, if things were to get more serious, you know, I don't think it was a terrible thing of your husband to get a policeman involved. However, if it's done in the light of love and acceptance and understanding,
mm.
it could be, you know, a little bit of a scared straight lesson. The
yeah.
problem is, it wouldn't have happened, I don't think, if there had been that love and acceptance.
Yeah.
I think it happened because he didn't feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, how do you trust? How do you, you know, I think you can explain to him, you can not explain, but say to him, I trust that you know that that was not an okay thing to do, and that you had some reasons for doing it that maybe you'll share someday, maybe you'll never share. But I trust that you know that that's not okay, that that's wrong.
Yeah.
And I trust that that's not going to happen again.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
That's really brilliant. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Annabelle.
Yeah.
So, the no blame solution is about allowing children to truly experience the consequences, the natural consequences of their behavior. So when we blame them, when any of us are blamed for anything, what happens to you? You get defensive, right? It becomes, you're very in your own head about, oh my God, what's happening? So when a child is blamed, they don't have the opportunity to see what the natural consequences of their actions are. If they hit a sibling, for instance, and the sibling is crying, hit her head, or she's crying and upset. Once you start blaming the hitter goes behind his wall of defense. And depending on the number of instances when that happened, when that hitting, depending on the number of instances that the child has been blamed, that wall of defense will be pretty high. So once that defense, and defense behaviors are things like lying and stealing, are things like getting mad at, you know, projecting their anger on someone else, blaming someone else, bullying someone else, because that blame is bullying. We teach our children how to bully other children. So bullying behavior is defensive. Laughing is defensive. Blocking their ears and not listening is defensive. So when we blame, we are building brick upon brick upon brick on that wall of defense. So our child is focused only on how they're not going to get in trouble, only on how do they get away with this. So they can't take in the natural consequences of their behavior. When they can take in the natural consequences, that's when conscience grows. That's when they really see how their behavior affects another. And, of course, it's all within the context of their developmental process. So blame does no good. You know, it's what we do. It's what's been done to us, and it's what we do. So think about it. See if you can release yourself from thinking you have to blame your child and find another way of saying, I'm worried about something, or I know you didn't mean such and such, and I would like your promise or your word, your assurance that that's not going to happen again. There are a lot of ways around it that can hold your child accountable. All right, any questions at this point? Back on page 26, at the end of your part one workbook, because I wasn't sure how many were going to be continuing with part one, with part two, I put this at the end of part one. On your page 26, you have what I call the refrigerator list. It's in a black box, and it's what to do when my button gets pushed. The stop, don't react, breathe, detach, look for the root of the behavior, self-talk, change your perspective, reach across the gap and connect, identify your limiting beliefs and adjust your expectations. I basically just distill that down into something that you literally could post on your refrigerator, as someone was just saying they wanted to put their mission statement, Teresa maybe, mission statement on your refrigerator. Make notes to yourself. Write them and cut them and laminate them and put them around in different parts of your house, things that you know you need to be reminded of. And then that's just simplified from the nine habits, right? And then on page 27, you have three sets of the format of getting to new responses so that you can use these three sets and make copies of this page so you've got lots. So this is where you can write down the situation after it's happened so that you keep the habit going of being aware of your emotion and what your reaction was, and then looking at the assumption that you made, the what you must have thought in order to feel that way, your expectation, and then your reframed assumption and the different emotion that comes from that and the adjusted expectation and your new response. So you've got all that to use as many times as you'd like. And again, last opportunity here to make a comment, ask a question. I'm very, very glad that you've all been here, and I'm going to miss this group. Nicole, yes.
Hi, Bonnie. I just wanted to make a comment just first to thank you.
You're welcome. You
have a gift, and thank you so much for giving it. And just to thank everybody else in the class for sharing, because that was, like, one of the most helpful parts for me is to hear, you know, people I haven't even met, but I feel very close to you guys to hear your stories, and I really, really appreciate it. So thank you to everybody.
Thanks, Nicole. That was lovely. I think, you know, I've heard that from a number of people, that they're so touched and moved by other people's stories. And I know there are a lot of you out there who have not been able to be on the call. And I know you get a lot out of these stories, too, even though it's not something that you can actively participate in. But I've gotten a lot of work coming into me email-wise, so that's been good. Teresa, yes.
Hi, Bonnie. I just wanted to say basically the same thing that Nicole said, and this whole course is just laid out just in such a way that made it really obvious for me where I needed to work. I mean, the work itself is really hard and doesn't always seem obvious when I'm doing it, but your format was really clear, and it is something I've never seen before, and I've tried a few different things. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for that, Teresa.
Yeah. I'm so emotional today. Maybe that's a good thing. It means I'm being vulnerable.
Yes.
I just thank you to everybody. I'm so glad that, I mean, we all say we know we're not alone, and but sometimes it really does feel like I am. And I think there, I guess, so much shame that I carry. I tend to believe, even though I know it's not logically true, that I'm probably the only person in the world who has this many challenges parenting. And it really is nice to know that I'm not alone. And I've learned so much
about group work. Yeah.
Yeah. From everybody's examples and comments, regardless of the age of our children and their differences, I've learned a lot, and I'm really glad that I got the opportunity to do this with all of you. So thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. And I just want to say to all of you, thank you so much for your hard work, because it's your work that, you know, really makes it possible. You know, you don't want to just hear me talking all the time. Annabelle.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you to everyone as well, because sometimes I find it, my head's a real muddle, and it's really hard for me to get things clear. And by hearing other people with the same negative beliefs, just the clarity, I'm just staggered by the clarity of the people on the course, and it's really helped me to learn to reframe. Thank you. Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Annabelle. Well, it has been quite a powerful group, and I must say that I, in doing this as a teleseminar, I had my doubts about how well this material would work over the phone without us all in the same room together. And I'm very moved and inspired by the work that you've all done. So I thank you, too. All right. Now's the time when I plug my second book. Confident Parents, Remarkable Kids, 8 Principles for Raising Kids You'll Love to Live With. This is, you're at a perfect time for this now, or when you've processed this work and you feel ready. I think of the 8 principles in this book as 8 new reframed assumptions. So if you're fresh out of looking at your assumptions and you're able to see what they are and are ready to look at things differently, then these 8 new principles, 8 principles you can think about as reframed assumptions that, if held strongly, will lead you to respond effectively to your children and will leave you feeling satisfied and, yes, even fulfilled as a parent. Parenting just becomes simpler. But what it takes is that ability to let go. And as we heard today, how difficult it is to let go because of the fear that comes up when we let go. And that idea that if we let go, we're not safe. So that's got to be grappled with first. And that's why the work with you as the parent really has to proceed or at least go hand in hand with the skills that you learn in terms of communicating with your children. So Confident Parents, Remarkable Kids is more on the lines of here's what your children need and here's how to do it. Problem solving, conflict resolution is outlined. The first half of the book is the 8 principles chapter on each of those. And then the second half of the book is a chapter each on 7 ordinary events in a day, like getting up in the morning, homework, sibling rivalry, getting out the door, chores, all kinds of things like that. And with each of those, I put the 8 principles to work in each one, in each situation. So it's a very hands-on, practical book. You can get that either on my website, BonnieHarris.com, or on Amazon. And again, it comes in the MP3 version on my website and the CDs on my website. All right, it's time to close. And I want to do that by reading this wonderful piece from Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you.